Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning, G. Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Earl. How are you?
I'm not doing well, man. Let me begin the show immediately. It happened again in Nashville. In Nashville, Tennessee, three adults slaughtered by a person who walks into the school with two automatic military equipped weapons. You know, they showed the person firing the weapons to get into the building and just to see the power. Listen, I don't know. I don't own weapons. But to see the power of those bullets tearing through the glass in the doors to give him entry into the building. I couldn't help but as I watched that part of it, to then think that seeing the damage done to the glass, and that's heavy-duty glass in those windows, that those same bullets were tearing through the bodies of innocent people. Why? Why? You know, why is it possible? Or how is it possible that this nation can't fix this? Well, we want to go to war with China. We want to go to war with Russia. We're on the verge of doing all those things. All the money that we spend in military spending. But we can't stop the slaughter of our own people? Do you ever ask the question why? Well, we have a Second Amendment right, and I don't want anybody interfering with my right to own these weapons. You know, man, I almost think that part of this is our fault. All of our faults. Because for whatever reason, man, we can't seem to get this right. And I get more and more frustrated as the time goes on, because we know this is going to happen time and time in. We just can't seem to get it right. You know, as my guest walks into the studio, and I'm excited to have him in the studio. I just can't get beyond the fact that we just keep seeing this happen time and time and time again, and innocent people being slaughtered because the most powerful nation on earth can't stop people from owning weapons of war. That I think we have no right to own. You know, you may see it differently, but I don't know the purpose. I don't know how many times we have to repeat this over and over again. But anyway, I want to put that on hiatus and welcome my guest, none other than Mr. Joel Brennan. He is the president of the Greater Milwaukee Committee.
It is the committee.
All right. Good morning to you, my friend. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Earl. How are you?
I'm doing fine. It is good to see you after all these years. You and I have a history many years ago working in the campaign of then Mayor Tom Barrett.
Yeah, well, you get old enough and you got a history with everybody, right?
You know, man, you know, my hair was black then.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, and where did that time go, man?
I think we've both been doing other things. We've been doing lots of good things. In your case, lots of good things you've been doing.
Yeah, so have you, but I'm so happy that you accepted the invitation to come in and let's talk about the Greater Milwaukee Committee and all, and what it really is, what it stands for, and the importance of it.
Great. Yeah, and, you know, just to start with, I appreciate being here, and it's really nice to reconnect after this time. I've admired the work that you've been doing both here, but what you continue to do in the community, and it's nice to be able to partner with you on some of that stuff moving forward. But so the Greater Milwaukee Committee, and I've been there just a little bit over a year. You know, I felt a little bit like I was in my old job this morning.
Yeah.
I used to drive back and forth to Madison for about 3 years working for Governor Evers. So I didn't quite get all the way there, but
right.
I got a portion of the way. But the Greater Milwaukee Committee this year, we're celebrating 75 years in existence.
Well, I have to stop you because you replaced a legend.
She was a legend indeed.
Julia yeah. Taylor.
Yes.
And Julia, wonderful, wonderful.
Julia had been there for 20 years.
Yeah, She was just a wonderful, wonderful, committed human being.
She was, and still is.
Right.
And, you know, she does a lot of, still in her volunteer time, and, you know, she spends a lot more time painting than she used to
right.
do, which is a passion for hers, and teaches some people that. But she's also still deeply involved with the Beer Line Trail and other things in the community. But, yeah, and I'm kind of starting to figure out the world changed in the last few years of Julia's tenure with COVID-19
right.
and the things that are happening in the Milwaukee area and just the world that we live in now. And so we've been spending a good portion of that last year doing a strategic plan and kind of figuring out where do we need to be. The Greater Milwaukee's history has always been about taking up the most important things in the community. In its earliest years, that had to do with capital projects. It had to do with the downtown arena and a baseball stadium and a regional medical complex and a performing arts center and a zoo and all those
right.
types of things. That's kind of the origin story. But over time, it became one of the most important things around human capital. And now it's around the city's fiscal picture and public safety and education. And, you know, what are we going to be doing about those things? What the Greater Milwaukee Committee is a 200-member organization. It has the leaders of lots of the biggest corporations, nonprofits, higher educational institutions in Milwaukee. What can we do together that truly has an impact in what the future of this community is going to look like? And that's a burden, but it's also a great opportunity for us.
You know, as a grizzled old guy who's spent my entire life in the city, watching the development of it in... And I used to always say Milwaukee was kind of late in the redevelopment stages of it because Cincinnati, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, similar cities to Milwaukee, had already made that kind mm-hmm. of investment. And I used to always say, well, when is Milwaukee going to do something, right?
And we've watched it over the last 25 years. We've watched it happen, right?
Yeah, it's here now.
Yeah.
And even when they tore down the park east,
yep.
And I almost forgot what was there, right? Because we had seen nothing, right? It was just, you know, not being able to pull a trigger on making things happen.
Well, what there were, you know, I remember in my earliest days going to Marquette games or Bucks games, and there were nice parking lots
right.
under some of those freeways. That's
right,
what
right.
you used that for. And now you look at what's there and everything that's developed. And it did. It took us 15, 20 years to do that. You have to have some patience and you have to have people of vision. But that's an example where there were people of vision. And over time, the right thing started to happen. You know, there's now discussions around taking down 794 and taking that to grade. And that would probably take a similar amount of time. But that would also open up just really valuable real estate and can kind of give the city a whole different perspective than it does.
You know, you and I, well, I know myself, you know, back in my younger days, the barons, the beer barons, you know, the Smith family, and all the other major corporations and who board guys who were around, and the family still sat on the boards mm-hmm. of all those major companies in this city. And they made sure that Milwaukee was a beautiful city and clean. The parks were immaculate. There was nothing. you wouldn't see a crack in the sidewalks or the streets. And I remember those times, and it was, as they would say, a much simpler time. And so the power of those Fortune 500 companies that were here and their financial power that made Milwaukee at one point in time, what, the 17th largest city or somewhere around there in the entire nation when I was a young boy and a young man. And all of those things, the transition from the industrial metropolis that we were known all over the world, basically.
Machine shop of
the world. Yep, the machine shop of the world to now the fact that Milwaukee looks like she's on her way to be a destination place for visitation for people from across the country. Is it safe to say that?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think we've elevated the stature of Milwaukee in just the last few years with the Republican National Convention, the Democratic National Convention, a number of the things that we're doing. I got a tour just in the last week or so of the convention center and the completion.
The development of it,
The convention center. And I say completion because 30 years ago when it was built, it was always envisioned that it was, it was built probably too small to do all the things that they envisioned for it. And now finally we're getting around to that. But those are the things that drive new economic impact in the community because, if you have visitors coming out from outside, they're staying in our hotels, they're eating in our restaurants. You know, that's new net economic impact. And those are investments that are going to pay off. And, clearly we got our share of problems. And I've been working on, and I know you continue to work on and address Milwaukee's fiscal challenges at the city and the county. And, some of those are our own doing, but a lot of that has to do with the relationship between Milwaukee and the state legislature and things that happen in Madison.
Which is what we're going to get into. The president of the Greater Milwaukee Committee, and it's safe to say my friend, Mr. Joel Brennan, is in the studio. Our phone lines are open as always at 844-967-2789. You can join us. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Joel Brennan, and he is the president of the Greater Milwaukee Committee. So, Joel, let's talk a little bit about the fact that we see one side of Milwaukee that is just prospering and doing great, and then you can go a half a mile in one direction to another segment of Milwaukee that is now considered one of the worst places for African Americans and children to live in the entire nation. It didn't happen under your watch. Are the CEOs aware of what is, just unacceptable, the fact that where I grew up is one of the worst places in the entire nation for for people of color, and then you know, go half a mile one way, and Milwaukee is, you know, as Seal just said, flying like an eagle.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you're kind or gracious in saying it didn't happen under my watch. It happened under all of our watches. You know, those of us who have lived here have seen this. It didn't happen overnight, the bottoming out of the manufacturing economy, and, you know, where in 1970 Milwaukee was held up as the best place for African Americans to live,
a
middle class.
I keep telling people that, and they don't believe it. Yeah. I lived during that time.
And it's been, you know, I was born in 1970, right. So over the course of my lifetime is where we've gotten to it. And do people understand that? I think they do, and I actually think, you know, it's in everyone's self-interest, whether you're the CEO of a major corporation here or whether you're a family that lives in the community. It's in everyone's self-interest that prosperity be not just among the few, but be shared. And so I think there's that everybody feels some of that responsibility. And that's why you see people in the business community who are really focused on education issues, who are really focused on economic opportunity or, you know, racial equity. Like, there are a lot of people who are doing that. The question is, how do we make sure that we can kind of address those things with the right amount of resources and get tangible things done as a result of it? And the progress we're going to make is probably going to be incremental progress in the same way that the way we've gotten to things here has happened incrementally too. That you know, people left community, left neighborhoods, businesses and manufacturing left and didn't come back, and it just hollowed out places in the community, and we need to build that back block by block. There are people and there are organizations that are doing that, and, you know, to be honest, part of what I'm trying to do in the organization that I'm now part of is to make sure that we find and we can be the right kind of partner. We don't need to lead that. We're not going to be right out at the front of the parade and all this stuff,
right,
but how do we make sure that we can shine a light on and then get resources to the organizations that are really doing, truly doing some of that great work on the ground.
You know, Joel, Milwaukee is not alone. This is a reality all across the nation. And that's why I always say to people, it didn't happen overnight. The city itself, Milwaukee, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Kansas City, I don't care where it is, it's the same issue, is the same reality, and the question becomes whether or not the federal government and the state governments will do their share, because I think they're guilty themselves of watching this happen. And cities alone can't take on that responsibility themselves financially.
Nope, they can't. And in some ways, you know, what you're seeing now, you know, we say there are things that are going well and, you know, there's all this investment, but I, you know, I feel a little bit like Chicken Little, and I've been saying this since I took this new job, is things are going to get materially worse in very short order if we can't find a way to get more resources into the city. And, you know, the federal government, to be honest, over the last couple of years, they have done their part with the ARPA dollars came
right,
to the city. You know, they really, that $400 million has really forestalled what would otherwise be draconian cuts that the city would have to make for very basic services. You know, we've lived in this community a long time, Earl, and we know that the city's always kind of white-knuckling their way through. But we're at an unprecedented time where, you know, the city will have to cut firefighters and cops if we don't find the right
garbage collection.
Right. Snow removal.
Right.
The kind of the basics are all at risk if we can't find the right partnership with Madison. And I think there's some good work that's going on, and we're getting closer to that. But the time is now for us to do it. We can't wait any longer.
You know, the politics of it. And I didn't stutter. I didn't make a mistake. The politics of it is so frustrating because there's this misconception that I really want to talk with you about, that the city is getting all the resources from the state and rural areas aren't getting any. And so when that misconception is allowed to continuously be spread, that's where all the money is going. That's why there's no money for the rural areas. It creates this situation where the people in the rural area start looking at the cities and saying, hey, they're the fat cats. All the money is going to them, and nothing could be further from the truth. So, you know, our phone lines are open as always at 844-967-2789. You can text us that same number. My guest is Joe Brennan. He is the president of the Greater Milwaukee Committee. You can join us. We'll be right back. Choice of music, Joe.
Oh, it's great.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Joe Brennan, the president of the Greater Milwaukee Committee, has gracefully accepted my invitation to come in and talk. So, Joe, let's, as you and the CEOs of this city, over 200 different CEOs, look and plan out the future of our city. You know, the crime portion of it, and you hear people constantly saying that we just need more police. Got to have more police, more police, more police. And I always say to people, you are not going to ever be able to have enough police. Nope. If you don't change the trajectory of the way things are presently structured, where there are people who go to work and Joel and they work, they do the right things and they make $12 an hour.
Yep, yep.
Right. We ask them to work. They do. They work 40 hours. Well, not even 40 hours a week, because many companies won't allow them to work 40 hours a week because then they have to get benefits.
Provide health care.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we're talking about, and that's structural. And yet, how do you get people to understand that people are struggling, man, just to make it day to day in the wealthiest nation on earth? How do we begin to get people to see that the only way we'll be able to stop the killing and stop the crime is to give people hope?
Well, I think you say it well, and I think that's the most important thing we can do. But it's got to start, you know, I mean, there are lots of people who are focusing attention on early childhood education in this community.
Right.
And, you know, we have all these fights in the K-12, or we have for the last 30 years, over whether, you know, in the three different systems that we have, and the public schools and the charters and
right.
the choice, you know, there's all that rancor that goes on. Where I think we've fallen asleep at the switch a little bit on the, you know, 0 to 4 brain development.
No question.
And what that means. You've got this kind of crumbling system that families can't afford to get good care.
Right.
There isn't enough of it. And the people who are providing that care, most of whom have some college education or who are, you know, who really are teachers, they're getting paid that $12 an hour. So, you know, they have to be on Badger Care to get their health care. So, you know, like that system is so fractured that we need to have a community, a call to arms for us to fix those kind of things. But when it comes to, and like all those, I think, are part of the public safety effort. But I'll tell you, even when it comes to the basics around public safety, and, you know, if you've talked to the mayor of the city of Milwaukee, he'll say
absolutely
they spent $20 million more on the Milwaukee Police Department in this year's budget than they did last year to get fewer cops because of the way, you know, because
the pensions
of
and
all those right. obligations and payment. And, you know, that's what you're getting. So the fact that those dollars continue to increase to get fewer services is kind of a microcosm of what the city of Milwaukee has been facing for a long time. The spigot got turned off for Milwaukee and for 1,800 other units of local government about 30 years ago from the state. There's the state shared revenue program. It's the same dollars. In fact, fewer real dollars than we have now than we did 25 years ago. Do you think costs have, you know, we just said the cost between last year and this year went up to provide the same services. The city of Milwaukee has the property tax, and they have the state shared revenue program. That's really the limited ways that they can raise revenues, otherwise, other than fees that you and I pay for right. garbage and sewer, and, you know, and we'll do some of those things. But because we haven't had the right kind of partnership, and this isn't about, you know, blaming or exactly who's to blame, because over the last 30 years, I can tell you there have been Republican and Democratic governors. The Republicans have been in charge in the state legislature more than the Democrats, but the Democrats have had the majorities in the state legislature over that period of time. And over that long period of time, Milwaukee and hundreds of other local units of government, they have had costs rise while the amount of revenue that they're getting from the state has been frozen or fallen. That's where we are. And the city of Milwaukee, you know, we're in a position where within the next few years, the city of Milwaukee be looking at structural deficits in excess of like $120 million. That's different than what we've faced in your lifetime right. and mine. We've always had scarcity, but this is like going to be where you can't pick up the garbage. You have to lay off fire and police and, you know, things like that. That's what we have to fix. We've got, and, you know, I haven't, when I was at the state level, you know, and it wasn't my doing, but the governor and the legislature working together, they amassed a $7 billion surplus. Right. There is an opportunity to come and fix some of these things that have been wrongs over the last 30 years. And I hope that over the next several months, when they're doing this budget in Madison, they are going to fix some of those things, because it's truly important for the basics in your largest city in the state, in the economic driver and the economic engine for the state.
You know, Joel, I always hear the other side of the equation saying, give us that money back, that $7 billion. Yeah. And I remember when Scott Walker was the governor and there was surplus and he gave some of the money back. Maybe it wasn't Walker. Maybe it was the governor before him. I don't know, Tommy Thompson, whoever it was. But they gave back the surplus. And the next year, they were in deficit.
Yeah.
So the answer can't be give the money back, because there's so many different things that need to be done and taken care of. That if you have those resources, use them, not just in the city of Milwaukee, but across the state. You know, the rural areas that struggle and suffer in the state, we are faced with some things, I think, that many of us probably in our forefathers never thought about. Things were a lot simpler.
Yep.
During those points in times, the corporations paid for all of the health care and all of those things, and now none of that, very little of that exists at all. So people struggle on a daily basis, middle class struggling, lower classes almost non-existent. Our nation as a whole has to deal with these things collectively, I think, at the national level, and then maybe, and look at it and deal with it there. And then, Joel, I think, you know, it passes down the line.
Yeah. Well, and there are some of these things we can and should be looking at the state level, where our, you know, the problems of the rural poor and the urban poor are very
same.
Similar. You know, I mean, and I know you talk to people all over right. the state. Like, and when we talk about issues like early childhood education, it's a workforce issue. No matter where you are, there are these childcare deserts all over, everywhere in Wisconsin. And, you know, so as opposed to where the political landscape has landed us, where, you know, the rural areas have gotten more red and the urban areas have gotten more blue. If actually the people who are in those areas talk to each other and compared notes, there actually is a lot that they are facing that is very similar. The scale and the scope of it may be different a little bit, but it's the same challenges around access to workforce, access to early childhood education, you know, the K-12 education system. You know, those are not dissimilar whether you're in downtown Milwaukee or whether you're in Ashland.
Right.
Or, you know, wherever, Wautoma, all across the state of Wisconsin.
And clearly, the Greater Milwaukee Commission does all sorts of research to understand what the real issues are, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you don't just reach in the sky, you've done the research.
Well, I think that's part of what we all have to do is we have to make thoughtful efforts and we have to do things with, you know, by using good data. We have great partners in doing that. The Wisconsin Policy Forum and Rob Henkin, you know, who leads that, they do really terrific work that is unbiased. They're kind of the honest brokers that everybody can respect and honor the work that they do. And they've been like, you know, they for the last 15 years have been sounding the alarm of what's going on in the city and the county. And I think finally some people are starting to pay attention.
You know, Joe, I have to tell you, you know, and for those in the listening audience, I created a program last year called Voices of the Elders that addresses what I believe is a major issue in the city in which I live and have lived my entire life. And I watch children who basically during the summer get out of school and they're not going to Disney World. They're not going to the Dells.
They're not going away to summer camp.
No, they're not going any of these places. They actually are going to have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to live in war zones. And so they're not like it was when I was a kid and I could get a paper out at the age of 12 and earn my own money and learn work ethic. And all of these things have been missing for children of today when decades ago our parents and there was a system set up to teach us work ethic, paper routes. I don't care if you lived in the suburbs, wherever it was, you started and you learned work ethic through your paper routes. And almost everybody I talked to from my generation, same thing. And so I thought it was important that we do something to put some money in children's pockets so they can maybe, you know, go to state fair, right? I used to do all those things even from a family of 12 because that was there. And so it's no longer there. So I sat down with the mayor, and to his credit, the mayor is a brilliant young man who has a great future ahead of him, a big heart, and understands. And so he connected us with Employ Milwaukee
under Titania Brown.
And Employ Milwaukee created Camp Rise.
Yep.
And so for 200 boys, for 7 weeks, we created a summer program that I think has great potential down the road.
And what's amazing about that, Earl, you're almost understating it. I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, you did all this, you know, with Shaitania and the mayor in about 30 days or 45 days.
And we're gonna year two of Camp Rise starts again this summer. We've added 50 girls. We're gonna be dealing with kids 10 to 13 years old. But I said all that to say this. When you give people an opportunity to be a part of what is this nation, you know, the greatness of it, the economic power of it, the most affluential nation in the world, then it makes a difference, right? Because I know, because it happened to me as a kid. My parents couldn't give me things. So at that age, I could go out and kind of find out how to do those things ourselves. Those are the kinds of things that we have to do.
Yep.
And catch children young. Because if we don't catch them young and we keep allowing things to go down the path that they're going and the easy accessibility to weapons in this society, and so if we don't do something when they're young, they're going to have a gun in their hand later on. And then law enforcement is not, you're not going to be able to have enough police officers to deal with the young people that are coming up who just feel disenfranchised.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if you recall this, but over the years, a couple of jobs ago, I worked at Discovery World and we partnered to send some kids to camp there. Like any of those opportunities and what you're doing with Camp Rise is something that, you know, we're a partner on, and I'm talking to Shaitania, I think, in the matter of a few days, because there's still a few dollars to raise from the community to make sure that that happens. And and that is something that can provide value. The Earn and Learn program that, you know, that happened under Mayor Tom Barrett.
Right.
All of those are part of the effort that we need to make, and we got to get it to a scale where it's meaningful for as many kids as possible in the community.
Yeah, yeah, it truly is. And we've got to go to a break. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. My guest is Joe Brennan. He is the president of the Greater Milwaukee Committee. And when we come back, we can talk about the 75-year anniversary.
Great.
And what's available. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Joel Brennan. He is the president of Greater Milwaukee Committee. And Joel, 75 years.
75 years. That's older than you and me both.
You sure you weren't there 75 years ago?
I'm positive. Okay. I'm positive. But yeah, so the organization was created. It was a small group of people, probably a half dozen people in 1948 on the centennial of the state of Wisconsin.
Right.
You know, those of us who grew up here remember the
1976.
The 1848 when Wisconsin became a state. And so they kind of established this organization, and over the course of that 75 years, it's been reimagined, reinvented any number of times, and we're doing that again now. You know, it really will be about the next few years will be about fiscal strength for our local units of government, and what does that mean? Can we make the right investments to give people opportunities to live here, thrive here? And that's for everybody, for people who live in every neighborhood in the city and everyone in the region. And then what do we do around public safety? How can we make the right kind of commitments to education? And then what are we doing around our public infrastructure? As I said, the founding, kind of the founder story or the origin story of the GMC was all around creating these great things that would make Milwaukee a national and international destination. You don't want to ignore that. You know, we need to make sure we're taking care of and protecting the investments that people continue to make in the infrastructure here. But there are still things that we need to do around transit, around public health. And, you know, that will be the focus of the organization over the next few years. And, you know, and I think hopefully it'll be around for another 75 years, but we're going to take a little time in the coming weeks to celebrate where things have been, but also to acknowledge that we really have challenges that we need to bring people together, the right people together around a table, make sure that table includes everybody who is relevant to the future of the city of Milwaukee, and then move forward together.
So, Joe, how difficult is it in today's climate, the competition to bring in corporations into cities like Milwaukee? Your competition is fierce.
I think it's not that much different than it always has been. I think the biggest growth and the best people to bet on in terms of bringing people in are the people who have been here a long time. Northwestern Mutual committed another $500 million in the last couple of months. Fiserv, you know, which was located in the suburbs, doubled down and they're moving downtown. I think we get enamored of there's all these others around the country and we should be drawing them here. In some ways, those are a once-in-a-generation thing that happens. You know, I lived through the whole Foxconn effort at the state level and how we tried to salvage some aspects of that. But I think we're far better off by growing talent here, by taking the businesses that have been here for 100 years
expanding
or established 5 years and make sure that they're in the kind of climate where they can grow here. And it's been proven time and again that is a good bet. You know, over the last 15 years, Northwest Mutual has put down $1 billion in the city of Milwaukee,
right,
bringing people back who are outside. Like, that's betting on your hometown, and those are the kind of partners I think that you want to have. And so, you know, as we're moving forward, yeah, there'll be opportunities. There was just an announcement about Microsoft,
right,
potentially doing something down in Racine County, which will be great. But there aren't that many jobs associated with that. You know, it's not like the promises of tens,
right,
of thousands of jobs. But you do want to grow those things, and you want to do it where a generation can benefit from it. But you do that, and then you invest in the basics of infrastructure and education and economic development. Like, those are the things, I think, that allow you to become a great place.
You know, politically, there's a lot of talk nationally about bringing the jobs back from China.
Yep.
And bringing industry back to this country. It's easy to say those things, but how realistic is the prospects of those kinds of things?
You know, I've gotten a little further away from it because I'm not at the job at the state level,
right,
anymore. But the CHIPS Act and, you know, and the way that the federal government has kind of has said there's all these problems in supply chain that are directly related to the fact that you couldn't get, you know, these microchips that were all produced,
right,
in China or overseas, and we need and we want to be able to manufacture those here. And so they truly are putting their money where their mouth is in that. And I think there's opportunities for places like Wisconsin because of where we are, because where we're situated nationally, the you know, the climate issues that are real, that are being felt on the coasts, in, you know,
right,
whether they're in storms or snow or, you know,
or drought,
earthquakes or
heat,
drought,
yeah,
all right, that stuff, you know. We are not immune to those things. You know, you and I look out the window now. We had a snowstorm,
right,
over the weekend and at the end of March. But those things will pass. And we have opportunities here, and we have some of those building blocks. And so I think there really is opportunity for us to do some of those things here. And, you know, we're never going to be the machine shop to the world again, but you have to reinvent and reimagine yourselves. And there's ways for us to be unique in the attributes that we have and what we can bring to that economy.
So if in the last couple minutes, Joel, if you can speak on behalf of Milwaukee to the citizens of the state of Wisconsin who are listening right now, what would you say to them about the city of Milwaukee?
Well, I'd say, one, I'm going to put on my Chamber of Commerce hat or my Visit Milwaukee. Come and see what's going on here. You know, you're about to, opening day is next week. The
right.
Bucks playoffs will be happening. The beauty and the grandeur of Wisconsin and the being drawn to the waterfront, though, it becomes even more valuable in that experience in the next several weeks and into the coming months. So I think people ought not be fearful about being here and ought to come and discover it. But beyond that, I think that the people should understand that we all have a commonality. You know, you say you're from Milwaukee or Stevens Point, but we all have Wisconsin as our roots and our home place, and we ought to all understand that. Now, the work that we're trying to do with the state legislature, you know, will be beneficial, hopefully, to the city of Milwaukee, Milwaukee County, but there are 1,800 different units of government, large and small, that in some ways are tied to that partnership with the state. So banding together in ways that we can continue to provide basic services. You know, a firehouse in a very rural community, if they can't afford to be able to go to more than one place at the same time, that's not dissimilar. The scope is
right.
different, but not dissimilar to the challenges that we face in Milwaukee when there's a firehouse that's constrained in those.
Right.
So really, you know, again, I guess in a place and at a time when we are so divided, I guess my message to people would be, let's figure out how do we move forward together? Where do we find common ground? And I think that's what we all should be about.
Hey, Joel, it was great. Great conversation, man. Good having you in the studio. I'll be reaching out to you again.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we have this conversation and that the state really hears it from the horse's mouth. Got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by my good friend Robert Miranda in Fresh Water for Life. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Be right back.